Season 1, Episode 7, NYPD Lou. There's a werewolf in this episode. or at least a crazy guy who thinks he's a werewolf and uses that.
Who is a pretty well-known character actor, but I forgot his name.
His name is... I actually wrote it down.
He's in a lot of movies.
Okay, well, I totally messed up his first name. It might be Dan?
Uh-huh.
Hadea? Dan Hadea? I'm going to actually look it up because I feel bad. Because that guy was in a movie I watched for the DLM thing called Blood Simple, and he was really good in that.
Yeah, Blood Simple's a good movie.
So I wanted to give him a true shout out. But yeah, he's in this movie.
Have you seen, real quick, there's another Coen Brothers movie. Which one's Blood Simple?
Blood Simple is the one where Emmett Walsh is like a private investigator, and then this guy, NYPD Lou, hires him to kill his ex-wife and her new boyfriend. It turns into like a burn after reading Fargo situation, where some people got the money, other people have the murder weapon, and other people buried him, and the rest don't know.
I don't think I'm thinking of the same movie, because I'm thinking of Miller's Crossing.
Yeah, Blood Simple is like, I think their first movie. This is a completely different show. I gotta cut all of this out, but...
Have you seen Miller's Crossing?
No, I'm trying to find a way to watch that for free, too.
You should watch that, it's a really good movie. Okay, moving back on. Yeah, but this guy is a well-known character actor. I'm blanking on the movie I've seen him in, but I know I've seen him in other things. But anyways.
Also, another famous face, his name, from what I wrote down, looks like Zach Greener, who played Rudolph, the father of the kid. Me and Dad teased last week because I put him in the episode that's going to come out. He teased about this episode, and he just said, I remember writing in my notes, good episode. And I was like, yeah, this is the one where a kid gets messed with. And Sipowicz don't play with kids getting messed with.
But he handled it pretty well.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's one of the ones where, like, all of his rage is all internal. So it's not like him, like, possibly committing police brutality.
But I think it also has something to do with his son being around.
Like, he wouldn't have done... Oh, you mean he wouldn't have been that angry unless Andy was around?
No, I think because he was going through this thing, like, trying to protect his son, he had that more on his mind.
Oh.
And then also trying to be a better person, because, you know, the whole story is about him trying to get across to Andy that he's a better person.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think if his son wasn't around, and he doesn't have that interaction, mm-hmm. I think he probably gets a little bit more physical than he does with that guy. Because he really doesn't get physical with him, he just plays down to him.
So, let's talk about the storylines really quick, because we're talking about, like, three different ones. At the top of the episode, I think it's Lou. Lou is saying that he's a werewolf, he wants protection from himself, and the cops just make fun of him. They just keep calling, like, yeah, we get it, you know, you're a werewolf. It's a full moon, you're gonna hurt somebody. But they think he's just crazy. There's another one with two Sipowicz storylines, this one.
His son comes back.
His son comes back, which we have not met in the series, and he's actually very important to Sipowicz as a character.
I think it's the first time you realize that Sipowicz has a past life.
Yeah, the entire show you're just watching Kelly, like, bone his way through his life. But now it's like, here's a roadblock. You remember Sipowicz. He has a junior. Like, the kid is his own name, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
He has an Andy Jr., and he just showed up saying he's getting married.
Yeah. And what I like about that episode is David Caruso has to get Andy's attention. Because the kid kind of stands there for a while, and his dad never looks up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of took that as, like, Sipowicz not even knowing his own kids around. Like, you know that if dad was at work and you stopped by unexpectedly, he would kind of know.
Yeah, he would feel it.
He would feel it, so you can kind of tell that Andy's separated from that.
But it could be not, well, I mean, he was a bad person, because we remember episode one, Andy, but...
Well, he apologizes.
Yeah, like, from what we see, his conversation with his son, he is honestly sorry.
Yeah.
At least that's the way I see it. And I think that's what finally wins over Andy Jr. episodes from now, is he goes, no, this is a genuine attempt to be a person.
Yeah.
This is the like the first of the really good first season episodes because Sipowicz actually is a part of it.
I think, yeah. He and his story is so much better than I'm getting pussy left and right, you know? Like, it's just like David Caruso's like the thing I come to appreciate rewatching these is I think David Caruso does a good job with his character.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But like his storyline is super boring.
This is
the most interesting thing about his storyline is Lukowski's storyline.
Uh-huh.
And he's only in it by chance of fucking her, basically. Sipowicz, like, everything that happens is happening to Sipowicz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he had to do this all this mentally and change. And so it's just better, I feel like. And Sipowicz is a better character all around, I think. But.
Yeah, and it's, like, I just watched this, and I'm going to keep this in the episode for sure. I watched the movie Kiss of Death with Nicolas Cage and Caruso. I can't remember his first name.
David.
So it's David Caruso as the protagonist, and then Nicolas Cage comes out of fucking nowhere. And he is not normal Nicolas Cage. He is just, I'm the jacked Nicolas Cage. And it's okay. So insane. You gotta watch it. It's also really bad.
Okay.
And here's the deal. Dave Caruso, you're like, okay, you're starting with a negative. But you got Nicolas Cage. You got Michael Rapaport. You got Helen Hunt. Samuel L. Jackson.
Rappaport's bringing it. Rappaport.
So, like, you have all these people that are good actors, and you're like, why is this movie so bad? Oh, yeah, because David Caruso is the lead, and he shows no emotion at any time. Yeah, I recommend it. But him, just like in that movie, in this show, he's just the blank face that all this crazy stuff happens, but he's always right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now it's just kind of like, once we see that, oh, they actually have a character next to Paste Face that is just awesome, and he's a good actor, and we can lay those stories on him, and it'll work. And I think that's what makes the show get really, really good.
Oh, 100%, 100%. So then Caruso and Sipowicz go to her work.
Yeah, they try to get the dirt on this chick, and very quickly, they find out that she's just a raging whore. Like
that she's a slut, and that and that one of my favorite lines is, "It can't be Ellen. She hates men, and her tits point to China."
And how big of a dick was that guy? He's like, "Hey, I'm in the Paramus cop reserves." So
this episode and the next episode have what I love, which is blatant sexism. Like, we still lived in a time where it was just like, we did not give a fuck. We're gonna say whatever we want about women. They're like, basically all the women in the show so far have either been crazy psycho cops,
mm-hmm.
a lawyer chick who can't keep a job.
Okay, well,
she keeps jumping jobs, man. Like, let's be real.
It's the job of the month club.
Like, she's just jumping jobs back and forth. And so then, and the other cop, the one girl cop's dirty.
Yeah.
So they bring in, they're like, oh, we got this new chick. Yeah, she just fucks everybody. If you got the missile, she's got the silo. You know what I mean?
In this episode, it has that really cool scene. Because sometimes NYPD Blue just nails a scene from beginning to end. Almost like it's a play, because it's only one set. This one has the best one where he bursts into them having sex.
Oh, dude.
And
so good.
And Sipowicz just lays down the law and then basically, like, shames both of them. And then just drops 700 and goes, I don't care what you're doing. And then and walks out.
Alphonse Giardella gets shot.
Mm-hmm.
Laurie sees it. Well, doesn't see it happen. She's in the bathroom.
Isn't it interesting how, like, when you describe the scene that they're like, man, this is our big action scene. We're like, who gives a shit? But the scene where Sipowicz busts in and just lays
matter.
Down.
It really didn't matter. But it brought... Okay, so that happens. And Caruso's, like, at the... Because this brings to my larger point.
Oh, Caruso's, I think I know exactly what you're going to say. I think I know.
Caruso is... there, he's panicked, he's talking to Laurie. Laurie's like, I'm gonna have to testify, they're gonna try to kill me. Like, drama, drama, drama. And then, like, he's walking Laurie out, and Lukowski walks by.
Yes.
And Lukowski basically goes, is she okay? And he goes, it's gonna be tough. And then she goes, she basically is like, Yeah, like when we fucked last night.
No, she's
want to meet up tonight? And
no,
he's like,
no, she said.
What I wrote down was like, fucking read the room, Mikalsy. It's not the time to ask for dick right now. Like,
I know exactly what you're talking about. This was gonna be crazy. The moment. This is the moment where I will agree with you that Lukowski's crazy, and it's because she walks up to him and she basically says, "Hey, how's your wife?" After the wife's out of the picture, so she doesn't go up and meet the wife like go, "Hey, I'm so sorry. Like, yeah. I want to be mature about this. I fuck your husband now." "Hey, I'm so sorry." But instead, she like books it around the desk to get to Kelly and goes, "Hey, so how's it going?" He's like, "Oh, it's going to be a rough night." And she goes, "Last night was better." And you're like, "Whoa, what?"
Right?
Like 180 degrees. Right. Insane writing. Horrible representation of women. Completely. Like, no, she's not empathetic at all. She just was like, "Yeah, can I get more, Kelly? Because I don't want this sorrow to stop my sex time."
Yeah, so I, like, that just blew, like, I don't like her character, no. You know? And that just ruined it, because it's like, come on.
What's like, the point?
Come on. What are we doing here? Okay, so I have a question.
All right.
Is her name Lori or Laura? Everyone calls her Lori, and then this douche, her douche boss, like, calls her Laura.
I honestly don't know, because I hadn't noticed that they haven't been saying the same name okay. Every time.
Okay, because it was bugging me.
Every time she's on screen, I kind of don't care.
It just kept bugging me. I was like, is her name Lori or Laura? Because one of you is fucking wrong, you guys need to stop it.
There needs to be a script supervisor, just a person to go, "Guys, just remember, her name is Laura, okay? Laura." Yeah. And then walk out. What else happened in this episode? Oh, a child goes missing.
Yeah.
It's a weird...
The main, like, okay, so now that's like their personal lives.
Yeah.
Like, their job now, a child goes missing.
Sipowicz really doesn't like kids' stuff. He doesn't like when kids are in danger, and he doesn't like when kids are hurt. And you find that out from his character immediately when he just, like, walks out and goes, "It sucks when you know something's bad already."
No, he said, it was one of my favorite lines. It's because of the way he delivers it. Because he delivers it kind of like an uneducated person, but you still get the... like, how does the emotion from how he delivers it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like
if he says, "This one don't turn out too good. I hate it when you know."
He just went to whatever he could say to get it out at that point. Like, it's so bad. No, how do I put this? It's not that he's uneducated. He just isn't as educated as a person who, like, almost in a Shakespearean way, would deliver his point. He's just a dude who's a blue-collar guy who's coming down the steps, and he's telling his buddy, "Hey, like, this shit isn't gonna be good. Like, we can already tell by the way the family's acting."
Yeah, but I think what he also delivers is, like, he feels upset by it, too.
Yeah, there's something's wrong.
He doesn't like it. It makes him physically ill when it comes out of kid stuff. And then when they find the body... He's like, look, John, he got to look at his house before, as he died, because he, like, basically was raped and, like, left. So.
Also, it has another great Sipowicz scene, where a little kid basically lets it slip that there's a guy named Freddy, and then he's like, "Hey, you want me to pick you up like a bug and whip your arms and legs around above my head?" Like, it's just so funny, because Sipowicz is such a good detective, and, like, he knows how to probe the kid and what to ask. And then when the kid's basically glad it lets it slip, like, "Yeah, he lives, like, four blocks that way. I could probably take you to him." And he's like, "Now you're just going to fucking tell me. I don't have time to play games with you." It's so funny. Yeah.
Is part of his detecting him just being, like, super confident in himself?
Do you think that's an aspect of his detective work? I never thought of it that way. I just thought he was very intuitive. I never got the impression that he understood how good he was. But maybe that is a thing.
No, he knows how good he is. He just doesn't... He's from the old school. He doesn't flaunt it. He just does his job. But he knows he's good because in later episodes you hear him saying, like, "Why am I not third grade? Why am I not this? Like, you know, this person was good, but, you know, she never had no Bucci case."
Yeah.
You know? he knew he was good. He just never put it out there. But it just seems like he like gets the info, makes up his mind, and he just goes, and ain't nothing stopping him. You know what I mean?
But that also makes him a little bit more scary, because then what if he's wrong? But I can't remember a specific episode off the top of my head where he's so headstrong on one and then he turns out to be wrong. I don't think that's ever happened. But that's kind of the wrong message if that is the case.
Maybe, I don't know.
But he also keeps it open. Like, there's episodes where he gets in a guy and he goes, could be good. There are some episodes of NYPD Blue where it shows just how good Sipowicz is, because he'll say things to other detectives that's basically, I thought you were smarter than that. Where, like, yeah, they'll do something in a room and he'd be like, what are you doing? Do you not understand what we're dealing with? Like, that stuff is, like, the best. That's the Sipowicz I know and love. This episode had, because the main story, or the main case, is this kid who turns out to be molested and killed. But they did the heavyweight shit in this episode. They wanted the slow scene where the dad looks at his dead son.
Oh, God, yeah.
they wanted the really, really slow scene where...
Like, no offense to that guy. Like, he's a good actor in other things. He just, like... It was so... I felt... The first time I saw it, I was like, wow, that's very... I feel that's very racist. How he was portraying that guy. He was like... So it felt just like... I don't know. Just felt gross to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But...
He was... If you
like, why'd they have to be Polish?
Well, they had to be an immigrant situation, because they have to act weird enough that it makes you think maybe the parents know what's going on, but then you attribute it to, oh no, they're just a little weird. Because they're in a new place and dealing with new customs.
Yeah, she did a good job of that, the wife.
Yeah, it's a fairly good episode. If you want to know the guy we're talking about, it's the guy in Tommy Boy when David Spade was filming him and he goes, oh, your mom's really nice. I'd like a piece of that. And then freaks out. It's that guy.
Yeah.
If you want a face to who we're talking about.
That's what I was thinking of, but yeah.
But they really take their time. And even with the confession that Sipowicz gets, it's not a, like, snappy Sipowicz confession. Where, like, it's toe-to-toe. Sipowicz goes, like, it's a tennis match. This one is very much like Sipowicz just sits there. And he, like, pulls it out of him. And then he gets up and, like, he walks outside and smashes a door.
But see, I think, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but they don't have a lot of them. When they have episodes where they deal with, like, mentally handicapped, Sipowicz is, normally the guy. He just has, like, a good rapport with that kind of, with that stuff, I think.
Hmm. Max, don't ruin this.
So the hotel scene is really funny.
Yeah, it is. I think you would wear a
question,
ball.
The question you have to ask yourself is, did Andy do the right thing?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
It's not his life.
It's not his life, but if Andy is smart enough to prevent him from making a mistake that not only ruins his son's life, but the potential life of a child that they have together, then yeah, I'd say he did the right thing. Because what, we're taking her word that she was going to change as she was holding her tits? Is that what we're doing? Are we taking her side in this scenario?
No, but isn't it Andy Jr.'s problem to deal with?
It would be Andy Jr.'s problem to deal with.
Because like Andy Jr. says when he confronts his dad, he's like, he basically told him because he was his father, and he told him out of courtesy, he didn't have to tell him.
Yeah. But...
I mean... In the end, it ends up being a good thing. It brings them closer together as we find out, blah, blah, blah. But
what don't you think? Now, think about this. What if Andy Jr. is feeling a little bit hesitant to this new life with this woman who looks like this, who probably has had sex with everybody she works with? And he goes, if I tell my dad, he's going to investigate. If he finds out anything really bad, he'll just drop it. But he doesn't say that out loud. He doesn't convince... He doesn't even think to himself, this is what's happening. He just does it because he thinks it might be a good idea. Because he knows that his dad will check her out.
No, I don't think that's what Andy Jr. wanted.
Well, even if that isn't what Andy Jr. wanted, I like to think of it this way. Yeah, if Andy didn't do what he did, Andy Jr. would be living his own life. However, his dad is Andy Sipowicz. When you tell Andy Sipowicz, when you tell your dad who is Andy Sipowicz...
Kirk, I understand all of that. I'm just saying, do you think he did the right thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I had the superpower of his detective powers, then I would do that for my child.
Okay.
Because you heard him. He's like, I don't know what you wanted to do with it. And then when his son talks to him, he's like, yeah, she's getting an abortion. It wasn't my kid. So she's a horrible, horrible monster person. It's obvious.
Yeah, I'm not saying in the end it didn't work out. But what I am saying is, aren't we just supposed to let people live with their decisions?
Yeah, we're not supposed to. We're supposed to help those in need. And that was a need. He was in need of a better direction.
Okay, fair enough. That's fair enough. I'm not arguing with you that in the end it wasn't the better decision. Uh-huh. That's not the argument. My argument is, should he have, just in the grand scheme of life, interfered? That's all.
Okay, we'll call this segment Deep Questions.
Because Andy does this all the time.
Yeah, he does. He interferes with everything. You're
gonna find out later on, more through different episodes, that he does this shit all the time.
He's like a gatekeeper. He like sees people in their lives and he moves it to make them better.
The racist angel.
No, I got a deep question for you. Okay, so Kelly and his ex-wife are coming down.
Give a fuck. Who cares? But go ahead.
They're coming downstairs. It's before LaKelsey does the last night was great, blah, blah, blah. He says to his wife, hey, you know my number. Call me anytime, even late in the night. And she goes, no, I think I'll be fine. And he goes, sometimes we're fine now, but sometimes later we're not fine. Is he just setting groundwork to jump back to his ex-wife from LaKelsey due to this, like, sorrow boner he now has? Or is he actually a good person?
No, because didn't he spend the night with
LaKelsey the night before?
No. The episode ends, I think, with them spending the night together.
Oh, maybe it does. I honestly don't remember. Once they hit the screen, I kind of turn off.
Yeah, no, I think they end, so I don't think so. I think he was cut off from her once she started going out with somebody else.
Who'd she go out with?
That doctor. Hasn't she gone
to Cersei? That hasn't happened yet, though.
Oh, my bad.
I think that happens real soon, though. Yeah, it's Kelly shit. I don't remember Kelly shit. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. No, I think he got... I don't think so. Not that time.
Not that time. He's not trying to get back at his ex-wife that time.
Just to answer your question, I don't think that time. I think that time he was just generally concerned for her because she was scared.
Mm-hmm.
But he went with the LaKelsey that night, I feel like. Or even the night after, so I don't think so. I don't think he was laying groundwork to get back with his ex-wife.
All right. Deep question, answer. Yeah. So I think, I mean...
What do you feel?
For a second, because it's so hard to discern between when Detective Kelly is being sexy or Detective Kelly is angry or Detective Kelly...
First of all, he's sexy 100% of the time. So,
he doesn't really like to change the way he talks at any moment. So when he basically said, you know, sometimes we're okay now, but we're not okay later. The way he said it was just like how he talked to her when he was like, oh, I wish I had an excuse to get in that shower. And so I'm like, I don't know. And so he could very well be like, hey, you know, I'm really concerned, and you know, all that other shit, all of us being together and not together. Just call me if you need somebody to talk to. Or if it was literally like, hey, you know, if you want to have sex to get over this, just give me a call. So I don't know. But then again, it doesn't matter. He's probably going to go back to her and LaKelsey anyway, because that's how this show works for the first season.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. This is Kirk. I wanted to interject really quick. Something very strange happens to the audio right after this. Now, I didn't do this on purpose. I'm not trying to be a DJ. Enjoy.
This is better than the last two episodes.
That's for sure. Jesus. Very true. And you want to know why? Because they focus on other people.
Yeah, no. It's because, they bring more different storylines. Like, you can see Martinez is getting more storylines with them.
And you get to see Sipowicz actually changing. Because the way his son talks to him, you're like, oh, he must have just been a monster when he was his son was 10.
Yeah. So, well, that's what alcohol will do to you.
Yeah. It's a great show. Anyway, it's been Blue Balls, Season 1, Episode 7, NYPD Lou. That's right. Nailed it, title.
Next week, nailed it, too.
Next week is a nailed it? Well, we'll talk about that next week.
Tempest in a Sea Cup. We should preview next week.
Tempest in a Sea Cup, it's the introduction of Donna Abundando, also known as Donna Welcome the Titties. That's basically why she's there. It's pretty horrifying and disgusting.
I've got a lot of questions about
Dana Abundando.
We'll talk about it.
Anyway, every episode is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com. I'm at Kirk Has Glasses, and we're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod. Kyle, do you have anything to say? Anything to plug?
I listen to Korean pop music, K-pop.
What? Later.
Giving a free shout-out to shit that's cool.